Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for this Friday, November 2nd, 2018. Coming up this hour,
a possible breakthrough in the U.S.-China trade dispute.
Stocks around the world rally as fresh hopes for trade talks boost sentiment.
Apple shares slide as earnings disappoint.
And Wall Street awaits the U.S. jobs report for October.
President Donald Trump claims he would sign an executive order next week aimed at restricting U.S. asylum rules. I'm Michael Barr. That story and more straight ahead.
I'm Rob Bushka. Coming up in sports, the Isles and Rangers win shootouts. The Devils come up short, and Week 9 of the NFL is underway.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
Happy Friday morning, I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by the accounting and advisory firm Eisner Amper. Are you experiencing tax turbulence like most businesses? For a tax diagnostic and to connect to resources you need, visit EisnerAmper.com/tax turbulence.
It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And futures are rising this morning. S&P futures up about 20 points. Dow futures up 207. NASDAQ futures up 16. The DAX in Germany is up 1.2%. CAC in Paris up 1.3%. And the FTSE 100 is up 0.7%. 10-year Treasury down 9/32. Yield 3.16%. The yield on the 2-year 2.87%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.4% or 25 cents to $63.44 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.25% or $3.20 to $12.35.50 an ounce. The euro, $1.14.27. The yen, 112.87. And this update brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF. Nathan.
Karen, we have word of a possible breakthrough in the U.S.-China trade dispute. Sources tell Bloomberg President Trump is asking key officials to draft potential terms for a trade deal with China. Bloomberg Daybreak editor Richard McCauley has more.
Donald Trump would like to make this deal at the G20 meeting later this month. This is according to several people that have spoken to Bloomberg. What we don't know right now is whether this signals Trump is easing up on U.S. demands of China. Another unknown is whether the plan is even real. So Michael Every at Rabobank doesn't buy it for a second. He says it seems a perfect way to ramp up stocks before the election, corner Xi in terms of expectations, and guarantee that Trump can blame President Xi when the whole thing falls through. Quite a range of reactions coming out as the sort of hours go by.
And as Bloomberg's Richard McCauley mentions, those reactions do vary widely. Some analysts see it as a ploy by the Trump administration, but many others do view it as a true breakthrough.
Traders appear to be taking it seriously, though, with stocks in Asia posting big gains today. Joining us with details from Hong Kong is Bloomberg's David Inglis. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Yes, massive boost in Asia this Friday. In fact, this over 2% pop in the benchmark actually means that equities in the region just had their best day since the day after the U.S. elections 2 years ago. Volumes and turnover were also quite heavy, which add to signs that a bottom may be, hopefully, behind us. The Nikkei 225 closed 2.5% up. South Korea's KOSPI index better by 3.5%, best day there in 7 years. And China's CSI 300 up 3.5% with virtually every single stock in that index also ending higher. Asian shares just had their best week in 2.5 years. In Hong Kong, I'm David Inglis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, David, thank you. Earnings from the world's most valuable company are also in focus. Apple gave an underwhelming forecast for the holiday season, suggesting weaker demand for new iPhones. The company also says it's going to stop reporting unit sales for iPhones. We get more on that decision from Bloomberg Opinion columnist Alex Webb.
From an analyst perspective, from an investor perspective, of course, we really want to see these numbers. We want to know how iPhone unit sales are doing. For Apple, they want people to see the growth story, and the growth is in the revenue, and that is the line they want to push. They want to be something other than the iPhone company. They want to be the company which sells services on the App Store and iCloud and iTunes, and that business is growing. Crucially, in the last quarter, the pace of that growth slowed, a cause for concern, but it is trying to change that perception that it is just the company which makes all its money from iPhones.
But Apple stock did tumble afterward. It would stop reporting that key metric. Shares right now are down 5% in early trading.
Earnings from Kraft Heinz also disappointed investors. The company posted profit that missed estimates due in part to sluggish sales and higher costs. That has shares of Kraft Heinz down 5% in the pre-market.
Well, Starbucks, meanwhile, reversed stagnant sales in its most recent quarter. Comparable sales beat estimates in both the Americas and China. Starbucks shares are up 8% in early trading.
Now focus turns to today's U.S. employment report due out at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Economists forecast a gain of 200,000 jobs in October. Bloomberg International Economics and Policy Correspondent Michael McKee reports.
Call it the "we don't know what will happen, but we'll trade on it anyway" report. The open question is, what impact Hurricane Michael had on hiring, hours, and wages? Analysts don't think it had much of an effect on hiring and expect a big rebound from September's Hurricane Florence weakness. The big question, as always, is what impact low unemployment will have on wages. Last month's hurricane kept a lot of low-wage workers off the rolls, which artificially inflated the hourly average. If they come back, wage gains could be lower. If Michael kept them from work, we could see a second month over 3%. Either way, because of the storm, it isn't likely to affect next week's Fed decision. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Michael, thank you. Oil is heading for its biggest weekly loss since February amid speculation U.S. sanctions on Iran won't cut the country's exports as much as expected. A senior White House source tells Bloomberg the Trump administration will allow eight countries to keep buying Iranian crude after sanctions are reimposed next week. Japan, India, and South Korea are said to be on that list. Checking prices now, Brent's trading 0.2% lower, or 17 cents. It's at $72.71 a barrel. NYMEX crude at $63.41.
We get earnings for big oil today with ExxonMobil and Chevron set to report. Here with a preview is Bloomberg's Jill Schneider.
ExxonMobil stock has underperformed Chevron by about 14% over the past 3 years. Exxon's results last quarter were disappointing, though the company stayed the course on its long-term reinvestment strategy. Bloomberg Intelligence expects the oil giant to continue with that plan, ramping up spending to ensure production can reach its target to double earnings by 2025. Jill Schneider, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Jill. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. 5:07 now on Wall Street. And Michael Barr is here to tell us more what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Donald Trump said U.S. soldiers on the border with Mexico may fire on migrants who commit violence and that people who cross into the country illegally would be detained in massive tent cities. In a speech at the White House, the president insists without evidence that the families walking toward the U.S. are violent invaders who will endanger Americans' safety. The president was asked about how the U.S. military will respond if members of the caravan threw rocks at soldiers.
They're throwing rocks viciously and violently. You saw that 3 days ago, really hurting the military. We're not going to put up with that. They want to throw rocks at our military. Our military fights back. We're going to consider, and I told them, consider it a rifle. When they throw rocks like they did at the Mexico military and police, I say, consider it a rifle.
Later, the president campaigned in Missouri. Democrats also hit the campaign trail with just days left until next week's midterm elections. Oprah Winfrey stumped for Democratic gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams in Marietta, Georgia.
Anybody here who has an ancestor who didn't have the right to vote, and you are choosing not to vote wherever you are in this state, in this country, you are dishonoring your family.
Vice President Mike Pence also campaigned in Georgia for Abrams' opponent, Republican Brian Kemp. The Florida man accused of sending pipe bombs to prominent Democrats and critics of President Trump is due in court for a bail hearing. Federal prosecutors say that 56-year-old Cesar Sayoc should remain jailed until trial. A 97-year-old woman who was the oldest of the 11 victims killed in the Pittsburgh synagogue massacre will be laid to rest today. Mexico has taken a step closer to legalizing marijuana. Bloomberg's Amy Stillman reports from Mexico City.
Mexico's Supreme Court has ruled for the fifth time that stopping marijuana use is unconstitutional, which means that this is now a precedent that can be applied more broadly. Nevertheless, Mexico still has a long way to go before companies can start selling it, as we've seen in Canada and in some U.S. states. The court decision doesn't permit commercial sales, and the government can still regulate how people use it. In Mexico City, Amy Stillman, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thanks. 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. Great night locally for both the Rangers and Islanders as they skated to extra sessions in Brooklyn and Anaheim. First stop out west.
To win it for the Rangers. Moving in on John Gibson. Zibanejad scores! Rangers win! 2 shootouts in a row, 2 wins in a row for the Rangers.
MSG on the call as the Rangers earned a SoCal split with both games decided by a goal. 3-2, the final in a shootout. Matt Zuccarello scored to help end a 4-game road trip on a winning note. Islanders edged the Penguins 3-2 in a shootout at Barclays Center, taking both ends of a home-and-home with the Pens in the span of 48 hours. Isles coach Barry Trotz.
Tonight, I thought we were the better team, and you don't get the result that you think you deserve. So you just stay with it. And I thought in the second period, we stayed with it, and we had a really good second period. And, obviously the third, we knew they were going to have a push, and they did, and we were able to get it back on track, and we got a huge goal. Elite, and then, obviously overtime was exciting.
Thomas Greiss had 29 saves for New York. Devils skated to a 4-3 setback in Detroit. The Red Wings had a pair of shorthanded goals, and NFL Week 9 kicked off in the Bay with the 49ers hosting the Raiders. All San Francisco in this one, 34-3. Raiders fall to 1-7. 49ers are 2-7. Jets visit the Dolphins on Sunday while the Giants have a bye week. In college football, 12th-ranked Central Florida held off Temple 52-40. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Rob, thank you very much. And a reminder to tune into the Bloomberg Business of Sports show tonight for the latest challenges facing the Mets' new general manager. Plus, we'll dig into the controversy engulfing the University of Maryland's football team. Catch that conversation tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 11 a.m. right here on Bloomberg Radio, and download the Apple Podcast on iTunes. It's now 5:11 on Wall Street, ahead of the release of the October jobs report at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time. We'll get insights from Mark Vittner, senior U.S. economist at Wells Fargo. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. It is Jobs Day, the October jobs report due out at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time, along with the trade balance. Factory orders and durable goods orders are out at 10. Stocks are extending gains globally. Treasuries dropping and the dollar falling as a better mood sweeps markets on the back of fresh hopes for trade between the world's two biggest economies. The boost to sentiment came after Bloomberg News reported U.S. President Donald Trump is interested in reaching an agreement on trade with Chinese President Xi Jinping at the Group of 20 Nations Summit in Argentina this month, and has asked key officials to begin drafting potential terms. S&P futures are up 20 points this morning. Dow futures up 216. NASDAQ futures up 19. DAX in Germany's up 1.3%. 10-year Treasury down 8/32, yield 3.16%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.87%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.3% or 17 cents to $63.52 a barrel. And COMEX gold is down 0.2% or $2.70 to $12.35.90 an ounce. The euro at $1.1430, the yen 112.84. ExxonMobil and Chevron are among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Karen. President Trump ratcheted up his attacks on migrants. In a speech at the White House, the president says U.S. soldiers on the border with Mexico may fire on migrants who commit violence, and that people who cross into the U.S. illegally would be detained in massive tent cities. The man accused of sending pipe bombs to prominent Democrats and critics of President Donald Trump is due in a Florida court for a bail hearing. Federal prosecutors contend that 56-year-old Cesar Sayoc is likely to face additional charges and increased penalties. In the NHL, the Islanders and Rangers won. The Devils lost along with the Capitals. In the NBA, the Celtics handed the Bucks their first loss of the season.
Thursday night football, the 49ers rolled over the Raiders 34-3. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thanks so much. It is 519 on Wall Street. And live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. Joined on this Jobs Day by Mark Vittner, senior U.S. economist for Wells Fargo. Thanks for being with us, Mark. The median estimate of the economists Bloomberg has surveyed is 200,000 new jobs added, the rate holding steady at 3.7. Where do you sit?
That's pretty much where we are. I do think there's a chance the unemployment rate will drop to 3.6. Jobs claims have been very low, and we rounded up to 3.7 this past month. We're looking for 200,000 non-farm jobs. The ISM data that we got had slipped a little bit, but the labor market's tight. Businesses are scrambling to find the workers they need, and we should have a little bit of a rebound from the hurricane.
Yeah, so you're looking for a weather-related bounce. You don't see too many trade headwinds then in that ISM data?
Well, we definitely saw some trade headwinds in there, and I think that maybe some of the motivation for the president to seek to end this. But manufacturers are still growing. They've got a fat order book, and they've got about 500,000 job openings. And I think that we'll see at least modest growth in manufacturing. It won't be one of the larger gains that we've seen. If you look at the ISM, the employment indicator in there, it would be consistent with 25,000 net new jobs in manufacturing. And I don't think we're going to get that. I think we'd probably get half that.
All right. If we see continued growth in manufacturing, could that put a drag on other sectors of job growth?
I don't really think so. I mean, transportation and distribution is an area that we're likely to see a lot of growth in, warehousing and trucking. Again, we're limited by the number of available workers, and both industries have been scrambling to find workers. But there's always a seasonal pickup. As we move toward the holiday season, and shipping tends to pick up toward year end.
If we're seeing some of these traditional sectors in the manufacturing base struggling to find workers, are you expecting that we're going to see a pickup in wage growth?
You know, well, this month I think that the wages are going to be the big story, because a year ago we had a dip in wages. And so if we just get a 0.2% increase in average hourly earnings this month, which we should easily get, the year-to-year change would move up to 3.2%, and that would be the first time we've been above 3% since 2009, I think. So people are going to start talking about wages, but that's a good thing. We've been looking to get more wage growth. I mean, we've been wondering for years, why hasn't wage growth picked up? And productivity growth has been averaging a little bit better than 2% ever since the tax cuts were enacted. So that means that productivity is offsetting much of that growth in wages.
Would you expect in a report like this that we'd get a clearer picture of why we haven't seen the wage growth up until now?
I don't think those answers are going to be available for some time. I think a lot of it is structural. You know, in some ways, you've got all these baby boomers that are nearing retirement, and many of them don't want to move. Since they don't want to move, they're not out looking for other jobs and coming into their employers and saying, hey, I've got a better offer. Instead, they're just riding it out. They're staying put. We're not seeing that. You see that in the housing data, where we've seen far less housing turnover. And then on the lower end, you've got millennials. And the millennials, you know, it seems crazy to us older folks, but many of the millennials, their job isn't the most important thing in their life. And so their salary demands aren't as great as prior generations. So I think there's some structural issues that are going to take a long time for us to fully appreciate.
All right. Now, as far as this jobs report goes, though, how important a gauge is this going to be, do you think, in terms of solidifying the Fed's rate path?
Well, I think that they're pretty much on target for raising rates in December. But if we had 200,000 jobs in October, and in the past, when we've had a weak report in September, I mean, I hate to say that these repetitive patterns, we tend to see upward revisions to the September data. And so I think we'll probably see that this year as well. I think there's absolutely no reason for them not to continue to normalize rates. Interest rates are still very, very low. I think the one thing that may change at the Fed is that they've been a little too vocal And they've left the impression that not only are they going to raise rates as much as they've outlined in their dot plot, but they might even go further. And I think they were trying to send a message to the market that after years of overpromising and under-delivering on rate hikes, mm-hmm. that they had every intention of delivering on the rate hikes that they have planned. But I don't think that they're going to have to do anything more aggressive than that.
Mark Vintner, senior U.S. economist for Wells Fargo, as we await the October jobs report coming out in a little more than 3 hours at 8:30 Wall Street time. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it is 5:25 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by the New York Community Trust, where donors like you help them make New York better. Good Friday morning.
Broadcasting live from the Interactive Broker Studio in New York, Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by USCF. Invest in what's real. Visit USCFinvestments.com. That's USCFinvestments.com.
We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Stocks are rising around the world on optimism the U.S. and China will reach a trade deal. Dow futures are up more than 200 points, while stocks in Asia had their biggest weekly rally since March 2016. Bloomberg senior editor Jody Schneider has the latest on a possible trade deal.
President Trump wants to reach an agreement on trade with his Chinese counterpart at their discussions at the Group of 20 Nations summit in Argentina later this month, and he has asked key U.S. officials to begin drafting potential terms of such an agreement. It's unclear how much this latest rapprochement is going to last. However, this may be the time that he wants to do it after the midterm elections.
All right, thank you, Jody. Our other big story today, the October jobs report. Economists forecast the economy added about 200,000 jobs last month. Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice reports.
Bloomberg Economics cautions the impact of Hurricanes Florence and Michael could cloud the underlying strength in today's report. Hurricane-related job losses followed by recovery-related job gains. As for the Fed, it looks like they're on course for another rate hike before the end of the year, one way or the other. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinny, thank you. ExxonMobil and Chevron lead 9 companies in the S&P 500 reporting earnings today.
Shares of Apple are down 5%. The company gave an underwhelming forecast for the key holiday period, suggesting weaker than expected demand for pricier new iPhones. Apple also said it's going to stop reporting sales figures for iPhones.
Shares of Kraft Heinz are down 6% in early trading. The packaged food company posted quarterly profit that missed estimates, dragged down by sluggish sales growth and higher costs.
Shares of Starbucks are up 8% in early trading. The coffee chain reported better than estimated sales in the U.S. and China.
In Europe, shares of the owner of British Airways are up 1%. IAG lifted its profit goal for the year. Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And futures are higher. S&P futures up 19 points. Dow futures up 209. NASDAQ futures up 8. The DAX in Germany is up 1.2%. 10-year Treasury down 9/32, yield 3.16%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.87%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.2% or 14 cents to $63.55 a barrel. And COMEX gold is down 0.2% or $1.80 to $12.36.80 an ounce. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here to tell us more of what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. President Donald Trump says he plans to sign an order next week that could lead to the large-scale detention of migrants crossing the southern border and bar anyone caught crossing illegally from claiming asylum. President Trump also says he had told the U.S. military mobilizing at the southwest border that if troops face rock-throwing migrants, they should react as though the rocks were rifles.
We've already dispatched for the border the United States military, and they will do the job. They're setting up right now, and they're preparing. We hope nothing happens, but if it does, we are totally prepared.
The president made his comments just days before the midterm elections at the White House as slow-moving caravans of migrants are heading to the U.S. border through Mexico. Former journalist Heather Nauert may soon become the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. The story from Bloomberg's Bob Moon.
She is a former Fox News anchor and ABC News reporter and has been spokeswoman for the State Department since April of last year. And President Trump says Nauert is under very serious consideration to be the country's next U.N. envoy.
She's been with us a long time. She's been a supporter for a long time, and she's really excellent. So she's under very serious. We'll probably make a decision next week.
Nauert would be an unorthodox choice given her lack of diplomatic experience before joining the State Department, but she has gained the trust of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and is also close to Trump's daughter Ivanka and son-in-law Jared Kushner. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Edmund Zagorski has become only the second person in Tennessee's history to die by the electric chair. The 63-year-old double murderer chose the electric chair over lethal injection. His last words before being executed were, "Let's rock." China is taking the helm of the United Nations Security Council. Bloomberg's David Wehner reports from the UN.
China is taking the rotating presidency of the United Nations Security Council for November as tensions with the U.S. escalate over trade, North Korea, and U.S. abandonment of key international accords, giving Beijing a platform to highlight those differences. In a not-so-subtle jab at the Trump administration, the Chinese plan to use their one-month leadership of the Security Council to hold a debate this month on strengthening multilateralism. At the UN, David Wehner, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok. On Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. The Rangers ended the four-game road trip on a high note, topping Anaheim 3-2 in a shootout. Matt Zuccarello lit the lamp for New York. Rangers still tied in the cellar, however, with the Devils, who also fell 4-3 in Detroit. Both New York and New Jersey stuck on 11 points in the young season. It's been a different start to the campaign for the Islanders.
Now let's see what Letang does, whether he tries to go high glove himself. Right-hander.
A save will win it for the Islanders. Letang!
MSG Plus on the call. 3-2, they got the win over the Penguins in a shootout, completing a home-and-home sweep in the course of just 3 days. Thomas Greiss with 29 saves for the Isles, who were in second place in the Metro. NFL Week 9 for Bay Area bragging rights, all 49ers 34-3 over the Raiders. Oakland quarterback Derek Carr calling for accountability.
I love this place, and I'm not going anywhere, so I'm in it for the long haul, and I want to be here, and I want to see the men step up and say, I want to do that too. And just listen to some of our vets talk, man, it encouraged me a lot. I'm not going to lie. I didn't say a word when we came in after the game. I just listened, and we got some of those guys.
The Raiders are 1-7 under first-year head coach John Gruden. Jets host Miami while the Giants are on a bye week. College football, top 25 Temple lost in a shootout to 12th-ranked Central Florida, 52-40. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Rob, thanks a lot. 5:37 now on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. A special issue of the magazine focused on the Bloomberg New Economy Forum. Businessweek editor Christina Lindblad explains.
Many cities, many capitals in particular, are just literally busting at the seams in terms of population. Some of them have geographic factors that have literally hemmed them in. Others face climate issues, water scarcity. And so these are the problems they're trying to address.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time right here on Bloomberg Radio. It is 5:38 on Wall Street. Time now for the Tri-State Business Report. Happy Friday, Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Good morning, Nathan. You know, last fall, after a trio of deadly hurricanes, ratings companies warned coastal cities to get ready for climate change or face higher borrowing costs. But 12 months later, those companies have yet to downgrade a single city. In fact, in August, Moody's and Fitch gave AAA ratings to Ocean County, New Jersey, which has suffered massive losses because of increased tidal flooding. New York City faces future health costs for its retired workers, totaling about $103 billion. That's an increase of $40 billion over a decade. It has about $5 billion set aside to pay the bill. The liability was disclosed in an annual financial report released by the city comptroller. Well, Connecticut businesses have an easier way to deal with some tax issues. The State Department of Revenue Services has launched a website this week. It provides easier access to tax information and an online portal for filing and paying taxes. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thanks very much, Ed. It is now 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Poduskin on KYW in Philadelphia. I'm reporting on Kraft Heinz earnings.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WoWo in Fort Wayne. October sales at General Motors is said to have dropped about 4%.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following shares in IAG as the British Airways parent lifts its profit outlook.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WCCO in Minneapolis, I'm reporting that Target is touting its Black Friday deals early.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. I'm reporting on efforts at Weight Watchers to bulk back up after a dip in subscribers.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another story we're watching for you, Barclays has hired a high-profile city dealmaker as its next chairman. Rothschild & Company deputy chairman Nigel Higgins will succeed John McFarlane, who's leaving after 4 years at the London-based bank. McFarlane steps down as chairman after Barclays' annual general meeting on May 2nd. Higgins' appointment comes as the bank's strategy faces greater scrutiny from activist investor Edward Bramson, who's emerged as one of the lender's largest shareholders since March. S&P futures pointed higher, up 20 points. Dow futures up 225. NASDAQ futures ahead by 13 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's brought to you by Marks Paneth LLP. Marks Paneth accountants and advisors have helped closely held and family businesses reach their goals for over 100 years. And Marks Paneth's success is personal. Learn more at markspaneth.com/success.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. It's Jobs Day, the October jobs report out at 8:30 Wall Street time, along with the trade balance. Ahead of that, futures are rising with S&P futures up 17 points, Dow futures up 207, NASDAQ futures up about 6, the DAX in Germany up 1.2%, 10-year Treasury down 8/30 seconds, yield 3.16%, yield on the 2-year 2.87%, and NYMEX crude oil down about 0.1% or 6 cents to $63.63 a barrel. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump says he plans to sign an order next week that could lead to the large-scale detention of migrants crossing the southern border. The president said at the White House he also wants to bar anyone caught crossing illegally from claiming asylum. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis has named a task force to recommend ways to protect critical technologies from theft by China, Russia, or other adversaries. In a memo obtained by Bloomberg, Mattis wrote, each year it's estimated that the American industries lose more than $600 billion to theft and expropriation. In the NHL, the Islanders and Rangers won. The Devils lost along with the Capitals. In the NBA, the Celtics handed the Bucks their first loss of the season. Thursday night football, the 49ers rolled over the Raiders 34-3. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right. Thank you, Michael. It is now 5:48 on Wall Street, and we are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. I want to take a closer look now at Apple's earnings and outlook. Gene Munster is co-founder of Loop Ventures and joins us now. Thanks so much for being here, Gene. And looking at Apple shares in the pre-market right now, they're down about 5.1%. That news that the company is going to stop reporting unit sales seems to have come out of left field for a lot of investors. But did it surprise you?
You know, I was shocked when I heard it, but I shouldn't have been shocked because Apple's been laying the groundwork for really the past 4 years to try to get the street investors and analysts alike off of this obsession over iPhone units and more on the company's higher level, which is just overall revenue and earnings growth. And so, yes, I was surprised, but it makes a ton of sense because, Nathan, what the company's trying to do is redirect the message around how to think about Apple less about a hardware company and more about the overall business operating like a service, Apple as a service.
So you don't see this then as an indication that Apple is forecasting further sluggish growth of its gadgets that, you know, so many of us associate with the brand?
No, not at all. I think that if you look at the iPhone over the past 2 years, it's been stable. It's averaged 1% year-over-year growth. And so this is really coming from the right time to do it. I don't think that there are any surprises or any hidden agendas about why they're doing this. In general, investors look at companies that give less disclosure more negatively, and so that's why this kind of the initial stock reaction. But I suspect over the next 4 quarters, analysts will progressively begin to view this as a stable business.
Yeah, I mean, it will take some time, won't it, to get investors to sort of shift their thinking in terms of the type of story Apple's going to tell because, you know, I mean, you look at the product promotions every few months out at Cupertino. I mean, they make big splashes with their products.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, we'll take time. It's probably a full year. Every quarter is going to be one step in that direction. It really is going to separate also the good versus the not so good analysts because now it's they're not going to have the luxury to get some of these numbers from the company. And so I think you're going to see a little bit of a better distinction between the highest quality analysts as well.
So where does Apple see the growth in terms of the services it provides? Where's the most upside?
So when we think about Apple overall as a service, keep in mind that their hardware business operates like a services business. But they really see the growth in higher ASPs, which were a big surprise, and separately related to the segment, it's called the services segment, which is 14% of revenue. So the combination of those two is really what's driving the revenue higher.
Does Apple continue to face headwinds, though, in terms of its exposure to China in our last 30 seconds here?
You know, China's been surprisingly strong. We talked about on the call that emerging markets were a little bit soft, but the China segment was up 17% year over year. And so I think that that market in particular likes these larger form factor, even though they're expensive phones. And so, surprisingly, the China business, which was a big problem spot for a couple of years, has really rebounded in the last 3 quarters.
All right. Again, thanks so much for being with us this morning. That's Gene Munster, co-founder of Loop Ventures. And again, looking at Apple in the pre-market, it is down nearly 5%, Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:52 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. It's brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
President Trump and House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Texas Republican Kevin Brady reiterated plans for a 10% middle class tax cut next year. In what could be a $300 million loss for Sunoco, a federal court has ruled that the company can't revise a tax return after the fact to get a bigger tax break. And next year, the IRS will merge three of its advisory panels into one as part of the most significant restructuring to those groups since the 1990s.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now, in other legal news, let's look at the not guilty plea from Pittsburgh synagogue shooter Robert Bowers. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks with Robert Mintz, a partner at McCarter and English.
Bob, tell us about the hate crimes he's charged with and what prosecutors will have to prove to convict him of those.
Sure. Well, the history of hate crimes really starts in 1968 when Congress passed the first hate crime statute. And it basically makes it a crime to use or threaten force to willfully interfere with any person because of their race, color, religion, or national origin. So it's an interesting statute because generally, criminal statutes don't look to the motive behind a killing or an act. They simply look to the conduct. But in this case, in hate crimes, prosecutors have to prove that not only was somebody murdered, but they were murdered because of their gender, because of their race, because of their religion. And so it really goes to the motive of the killing. And in this case, the motive, according to prosecutors, was anti-Semitism. The gunman shouted out death to Jews or something to that effect as he was shooting allegedly in the temple, and that's what they will rely upon in order to prove those charges.
Death penalty cases are rare in federal court, but here federal prosecutors say they are pursuing the death penalty. Explain how that affects the trial itself.
Sure. Well, as you said, June, death penalty cases are relatively rare in federal court. Only three people have been executed since the federal death penalty was reinstated. And ultimately, it's important for people to remember that the decision about whether a defendant will receive death or life in prison is up to the jury. So that means that when a jury is impaneled, there are additional questions that have to be asked of those jurors to make sure that jurors can approach that decision with an open mind. And jurors who have a moral aversion to the death penalty, regardless of the facts of a case, will not be permitted to sit on that jury. So it takes time for both the defense and prosecutors to arrive with a jury that they think can be fair. And if you're the prosecutor, you want to make sure it's somebody who is willing to apply the death penalty if they believe it's warranted under the facts of the case.
And that's Robert Mintz, a partner at McCarter & English, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. Nathan.
Karen, thank you. 5:56 on Wall Street. Now time for the Bloomberg ETF report. It's brought to you by Oppenheimer Funds. Challenge the status quo with ETFs that adapt monthly to an ever-changing world. Find out more at oppenheimerfunds.com/ETFs. Here's Bloomberg's Pim Fox.
BlackRock is forecasting solid growth for funds that follow environmental, social, and governance protocols. Here to tell us about these principles and the ETFs involved is none other than Eric Balchunas, ETF analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence. This ESG investing, this is a big deal.
Yeah, big deal hype-wise. I'm still skeptical. ESG ETFs have about $35 billion. Only $6 billion of that's in the U.S. And you hear about them constantly. Investors just aren't biting. But BlackRock is forecasting that $35 billion is going to grow to $400 billion in 10 years. But they're also coming out with cheap products. So as the prices come down and now you can get an ESG ETF for under 20 basis points, I do think you'll see some gradual migration, but certainly the flows do not match the hype yet.
Okay, so people may want these ESG funds, but they don't want to pay a lot of money for them.
Right, or they want to see them outperform or some other value add. But so far, nobody's really biting.
Thanks very much. Eric Balchunas, ETF analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence. This has been the Bloomberg ETF Report. I'm Pim Fox.
All right, Pim, thank you. And S&P futures are up 17 points this morning. Dow futures up 204, and NASDAQ futures are up 12. NYMEX crude oil is down about a tenth of a percent on 8 cents to $63.61 a barrel. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.